Hello and welcome to Vintage Annals Archive. This is episode 79. As you have noticed, you did not hear the usual amazing song with my name by BJ Snowden. That's kind of a joke. I just thought it'd be funny to like play the egotistical podcaster. I mean, maybe I am, but I do consider myself a narcissist, not an egotist, because I feel like we're all narcissists, but I try to be a good guy. And that you know, so, you know, anyway, it's a bit of a joke on having a song about myself that really wasn't written about me at all. And BJ's fucking awesome, so I really am glad that her song is on this. Anyway, getting to the point, this episode was a little different. I got a message from Nate Wyckoff from Colton Classic Films, which is a website. They distribute films, they make films, they put films out, they restore films, all kinds of really cool stuff. He's going to do a much better job of telling you what he does than myself. And his production is so much better than mine that I just put it out. The other reason is what happened was, you know, once he interviewed me, I was like, oh, I'd like to interview him. And I'm like, why don't we just do this together as a double interview? So we're both putting it out. All I'm going to ask you is please check out everything, ColtonClassicFilms.com. That's the website. The Colton Classic Film is the Instagram. And there's also a podcast called Cult Classic Films, which this episode is. And again, I just wanted to kind of do a little introduction and really ask you to support their work. They're, you know, I think we're definitely very strange bedfellows. Definitely coming from a place of trying to help people. Definitely trying to come from a place of doing independent work and just kind of, you know, kind of being real, as authentic as we can be. And it was really great to get to know Nate. And I'm looking forward to hopefully working with him more. And, you know, partnering a little more with both of our works. So enjoy, and please check out, again, please subscribe and check out their podcast and ours too. Please, thank you.
Hey, Fiends of the Pod, this is your host, film critic, and comedian Nate Wyckoff, reminding you to like, subscribe, and comment. You can also go to ColtonClassicFilms.com/subscribe and sign up to have cult-exclusive movies sent to your door every single month. These are ultra-low-budget exclusive films that we get to you in the best quality possible with tons of extras like commentaries, milk caps, autographed posters, slipcovers, all sorts of neat things. And remember, every time you like, subscribe, and buy a movie from us, you prevent Michael Bay from making one more film. So go ahead, subscribe, and enjoy.
Welcome to Colton Classic!
Welcome, friends and fiends. I am host of Colton Classic Films podcast, Nate Wyckoff, film critic and comedian, and I'm super excited today because we are talking with Rich Wexler. How are you doing, Rich?
Doing good. You have so much better of a radio voice than I do. I'm a little jealous.
You know, it comes from two things. It comes from doing sales and doing comedy. You kind of have to. You know, when your material is just mediocre, you really got to sell it. So Rich, I've wanted to have you on for a long time. I can't wait to get into the stuff. You created, it was first an Instagram page, and it still is, Vintage Annals Archive. And you share, tell me about it. What was the purpose when you started?
I just had another interview about an hour ago, and if I'm being honest, I don't know if I've ever had a purpose for any of it. A lot of it has been following a mixture of opportunity and obsession.
I love the word obsession in that. That's totally, totally great because when we would get obsessed with something, our enthusiasm pushes out and it really makes it more interesting to other people. Like, you know, it's like there's been a couple of interviews that I've done. They're wonderful people, but
yeah.
I haven't even run them because they're so, it would actually, to me, be a disservice to them because there was no click. There was no, there was no passion. So,
that sucks.
It does suck. And also it's, you know,
I've only had two of those and I won't talk about them, but, otherwise I've been very lucky. Can you want to explain what we're doing? And then if I can ask the first question, that's
absolutely.
Unless you want to ask the first question, it's your show.
Nope. You absolutely go. I'll let you pitch. It'll be nice actually to have you pitch the first question. So, what we're going to do today is instead of just a straight interview one way, we figured that we would actually ask each other questions and let the conversation go organically and then, you know, pitch in another question. That way, everybody from both the Vintage Annals Archive outside of podcast and Colton Classic Films podcast fans can kind of get an idea just a little bit more about each other and also I mean, I want to share why I love Vintage Annals Archive. So, all right, let's hit it off. You can take the first go.
What I'm interested in about this conversation is I'm interested in talking to you about where you and I meet. I think that might be the mm-hmm. best way to do this is like, where are the common interests? That way I think we'll make a better conversation. You're cool. So I wanted to ask you in terms of, cult classic films, what would you say historically are your three go-to? This is kind of like a desert island question, but
yeah.
I guess I'm just curious on like which films or which set of films or which whatever even actor, like what was your movie like that your brain like snapped and you're like, I gotta get involved with this shit? Like, was there a certain, what was that? And if you could share that experience, I'd love to hear about it.
That's a good question. Yeah, the whole desert island thing is always hard, and it's sort of like it changes week to week. But when
just
I actually
like anyone like don't yeah, yeah any,
the way
anyone.
You actually the way you pitched that made me kind of put in a different perspective that made it more interesting to, or made it more clear to my brain, which is, you know, when I sort of fell in love with film was even, and I don't know if this is the same for you with photography, I didn't even realize I was falling in love with it. But what it was is probably when I was growing up, my parents loved old monster movies, specifically nice. Godzilla and like the Universal Monsters, and then also gotcha. Like Abbott and Costello. And so I grew up with those, and I don't really think it was something different. I was young, you know, probably like four
you're
or five.
Like early 30s, mid 30s?
I'm 39.
Okay, so 39. I'm 53, but I mean, it's in the same ballpark, but not anyway. But go ahead.
Right. Neither of us are anymore in the target marketing audience.
No.
But yeah,
for AARP, but otherwise, no.
We live in Palm Springs, my wife and I, so we're definitely nice. we get hit with that. We just lump in. It's fine. Nice. Yeah, but what I was is I started to realize early on that like I was interested in the things and loved the things that other kids my age did not have any exposure or interest to. So when I grew up, I started gravitating towards cult because I had consumed so much before that point, so much of the mainstream, so much of things that were already available, that I was looking for something different.
Gotcha.
You know, and so it was one of those, and also as I get farther in, and I think this is why I love, your setup so much is it's like, it's a constant discovery. Like once that moment you realize there's never going to be an end to the film that you discover. There is never going to be a whole, you know, I'm like, I know everything that's out there. You're wrong. You're wrong.
Well, yeah, yeah. And can I interject for a second?
Yeah.
And what I'll say to that is you're right, but yet I can't even tell you how many days I start that and go, I have nothing left to fucking post. I'm done. It's over. But go on. Sorry.
Well, no, it's interesting because you say that because anybody, and I urge people to go follow Vintage Annals Archive. That is Annals, A-N-N-A-L-S, not anals.
Also, it is a butt joke.
It is a butt joke, but it's also, you know, you'll get a totally different page. Yeah, so Vintage Annals Archive on Instagram, and also VintageAnnalsArchive.com, which you put out there, and you can kind of post stuff that Instagram throws you in Instagram jail for, which we all know is a pain in the ass.
Yes.
I can see where it's difficult for you because the amount of content you put out is shocking. I mean, I can spend an entire day's worth of you know, pointless scrolling on social media and just be on your page.
Well, you thank know? You. I mean, I think, you know, as I don't know, like I'm one of those people that I don't give a shit and yet I do give a shit. I'm like, mm-hmm. I consider myself a lazy person, but I've built this thing, but I like the idea that it's Instagram because it's an archive that I don't have to fucking download or look up mm-hmm. or search through. I just scroll it. And to me, that was the beauty of an archive online that you could just fucking scroll. And if you wanted to, you could get to fucking, we're 13 years old. So what year is that? That's 2000, whatever. You know, you could go through it. And what's also, what's interesting too, I don't know if you find this in terms of Instagram, it's gotten so different. That the shit I put, I mean, I don't know if this is rude or if it shares or not, but I there was some kind of like website thing where you could make a little Donald Trump heads and you could make mm-hmm. like a thing. And I just made a penis of Donald Trump coming Donald Trump faces. And that was okay back in the day of Instagram. Now you get shut down for that. But I digress.
Well, it's, I like that. I like that concept though. We can go into that because I do think, you know, Instagram, People always say, you know, a social media site has a lifespan, right? There will be something new that will come up and bump it out eventually. And those of us that have built a lot on those are terrified of those moments. You know, like I know a bunch of people who are still on Facebook and they're like, I can't let it go. And I get that. And TikTok and et cetera. I'm like, I pray to God, I don't know what I'm going to do with video, that much content. I can't even imagine it right now. But the thing about Instagram that I love too is it's a totally visual medium, right? Yeah. Like you can add text and stuff, but I never gravitated towards Twitter. I never gravitated towards even Facebook, the other social media sites, because one, I'm ADHD to the extreme.
Right.
And two, my interests include such an important visual element. You know, my first career was illustration, and it just spoke to me in a way that I had never found a social media element outlet that I liked so much. It has gotten really difficult to walk that line. And I don't know what your take is, because I know you've posted about this before on Instagram, which is always funny because I've done it too. And you do those sort of almost anti-Instagram posts on Instagram. And it's this really weird.
People just get mad at you for like, well, then get off, motherfucker. I'm just saying, I'm just sharing an opinion. Sorry, sir.
Yeah. I'm like, I'm just sharing facts about what we had to go through. But it's also this weird thing where I feel like it used to be a viewer's platform. Like I'd put stuff out and people would consume my content. And now there's this interactive element that has sort of gone sideways for me, because I'm finding now everybody from like a socially ethical, conscientious person to an outright monstrous, bigoted, racist troll has the ability to sort of flag content for inappropriate. And what happens is it really seems to be like hitting the hardest at sort of outsider, I love that term too, outsider content, a queer content. So many of my gay and queer sex, friends.
Anything drugs.
It is really brutal. And it's made it so, you know, I kind of don't always understand. Like I can see somebody reposting pictures of women flashing their vagina before I can see someone's personal photo going to Folsom Street Fair. You know what I mean? Like I don't really understand it, and it can only come from this sort of arbitrary system.
I don't want to get too much into this because I've like had to really fight to get over all this shit, but I can say like I spent 17 hours on the I paid for the like whatever it was, the membership shit, so I could get customer service, but it's all bots. I argued with bots for 17 hours and I got my account mostly restored. But it was shut down for almost like 9 months, and my following went down 90% because they weren't sharing my information anymore. Right. And it was because of the most dumb fucking shit.
Yeah.
And I don't mind getting flagged if I push it, but like, you know, I had one of the things I posted, it was from 1970s. It just said Proud Dyke.
Yeah.
Right. And then that got flagged for hate speech.
Right.
And it's because, you know, I have trolls. I mean, I'm not always nice to my trolls. I block them a lot. They probably come and fuck with me. I try to be nice, but not always. And, you know, there's certain people, like, if you want to shut someone down, it's easy to do it if you know the rules.
Yeah.
And it is seemingly set up to only respond to people's complaints because I've posted shit from other people's sites to test it out, and yet it's not something automatic, so it has to be reported.
There's what I was told by someone who briefly worked at Meta, who owns Facebook and Instagram, is that there have been some sort of, I assume they're AI driven algorithms to sort of pick things out, like, oh, this looks like a gun, this looks like a word, you know, a bigoted word, and those will flag them. But I tend to have less problems with that, and when we have a problem, it's very clearly somebody, as you said, reported it. And as you said, this is just not just my personal experience. Those of you out there who are thinking that it's worth it to pay for the check mark because you get the service, whatever, it is, please don't do it.
I did get my account restored.
Okay, from that. Fair then. Okay,
but that's good to know. It took me 18 hours over in Myung, which was very hard to go through.
Well, you know what though? That actually makes me feel better because I had someone and they didn't get any help from it at the time, but I also, you know, they didn't stick with it for that long for sure because their account was not completely taken down. However, I went through it was like a 5-month battle to get them to turn off an ad that had somehow caused a tech problem, and it was charging us, and it just could not turn it off. And it got to the point, this, and I actually, as you said, I had to move on. I totally understand that. I still trying with this.
You can't erase ads.
No. The bot, by the way, that is, you know, because they were somewhat convincing for the first like 2 minutes. Right. They stopped responding. I mean, I got shut out by a bot after 5 months. Like, they actually shut it out
I want you to answer the first question though, and then I want to move on, if that's okay.
Yeah. What was the first question?
Just some of the films.
Oh yeah, yeah.
That really, you know, blew your mind, kind of. You know, I don't know. You know, again, like, I don't. It doesn't mean there's an island, but I am curious on the films that have obsessed you the most. Uh-huh. And it could be any time. Like, it could have been a week. Like, I don't. And just mm-hmm. just certain films that you fell in love with, had a bit of a healthy obsession. Sure. What are some of the ones that you're like, man, I know, I love this one.
Oh well, so one movie that I always love, and I recommend, knowing that there's a lot of people who will find it dull or boring or just completely hate it, is. It's a 70s movie called Messiah of Evil, and it also was released under Dead People and probably a couple under, you know, sort of other sort of drive-in names. But it's one of these movies where, and there was a nice re-release.
Can I find it under Messiah's Evil?
Messiah of Evil? Yep. I think that's the most common one at this point.
All right, go on. I'm sorry, man.
No, it's fine. But it's made by the producers of Howard the Duck. They made that later. And this movie, what I loved about it was it's sort of like a Carnival of Souls classic atmospheric horror movie. The plot is very nonsensical, but it had all of these weird elements that were things that you just didn't see in the mainstream. You know, it wasn't extremely outrageous, but you have a woman who's by herself, who's looking for her lost father, who's a painter. There's no clear indication why that is, except for the fact that the house she's in, or his house, has murals of like life scenes painted all over, just like life scene, like nothing shocking, but the visual element was there. And so at the time I loved looking at it. I thought it was really cool. Nice. It was this great 70s 60s aesthetic.
I'm gonna watch it later today.
I love it. I'd be curious to see what you think about it. But also so I loved the look of it, but then when I got older and got more into film, I could still watch it, and I would even get more out of it, because all of a sudden I was like, oh, this is brilliance of sort of conservancy, of efficiency, because they had this available to them. So that's what they used, and they worked it in to make it interesting. It also has a threesome, a polyamorous sort of group that shows up, this man and this woman and this sort of younger woman who is sort of, you know, slightly the third one out, you know, that's the extra person. Not that you know every polyamorous relationship has that, but
there's always someone being left out at some point.
That's kind of what it feels like.
I'm not poly, but I can roll with them. But go on, yeah, sorry.
So, but you know, but it was interesting because I mean, just that, and then of course I always love monster movies, and it has like a zombie element. So it was just one of those things where I was like, oh, this movie has so many things that I've never seen at that point in my life. Like, I just hadn't seen these things before there was even a word thrown around for polyamory. You know what I mean? Like, and so it was just one of those things where, and I can still watch it and enjoy it. It's got a great like 70s cascading sort of free disco, but close R&B soundtrack. Like, it could have been
knockoff. I'm really excited about this.
Well, I'm excited to oversell you on it. So, but no, it's, but anyway,
he did say he was a salesman, everybody.
Right. No, and that's the one I love probably the most.
Nice.
But then I think music, like, I love the musician Beck. And part of it is, I think, his music changed with me, and it still seems to resonate as I get older. Certain bits, like, I may not listen to his oldest albums as much anymore, but his new stuff is way more mellow. It just seems to fit. And movies for me kind of have that same effect. I can love a movie and never want to watch it again because it's not me anymore. You know, I'm not at that stage of life. So like right now, like, you know, the Korean film that won Best Foreign Picture a few years ago, Parasite, is a brilliant movie.
Yeah.
It spoke to me because of, you know, especially being in the United States right now, as the financial element, the social element, this sort of crushing feeling of hopelessness that can hit when you realize that you have a lot less control over your environment than you thought you did.
Okay.
Something like that really spoke to me and still speaks to me at this time. And I think it It's just much more important to me than it would have been if it had come out 20 years ago and I saw it, and I just wouldn't have resonated. And so I like movies I like these movies because I can change my focus of them as I change personally.
Can I interject for a second?
Please.
I want to ask you one more question, but then I want you to ask me the same question, and then okay. I want you to ask one more question if it's okay.
Sounds good.
You cool with that? Yeah. I want to ask, and I want to answer. I want to answer this question too, but I want to ask you first. What was there a cult film in the last 5 or 10 years like that you would have missed originally that just fucking rocked your world that you had never seen before? Let's put it in the last 3 or 4 or 5, 10 years, like past your, I'm thinking about past your, whatever you call your prime of interest. I mean, mm-hmm. when we get older, we don't have the same energy for it.
Right.
Although I guess we do, you and I, because we're doing this shit. But point is, like, I'm just curious on something you found later in life, mm-hmm. because that was of that same world, mm-hmm. But that you found exciting. I don't know. To me, sometimes it's really exciting to be like, oh, I would have loved this in 1983. I'm really glad I know it, even though I missed it. Is there some one of those movies for you? Does that have to be, you know, that you've experienced that you came at later in life that really blew you away?
Yeah, it's a really weird one too, because it's not, I would say it's cult, but it's not unknown. It's a mainstream release. And actually okay. I credit, Peaches Christ, Joshua Grinnell and, Michael Verratti for their amazing, which they're, I know we're both fans. Their podcast, oh Midnight Mass.
They're the nicest people I've ever fucking met.
They are. They've been on, my nice. Pod several times and Peaches, I actually told her the other day she changed my life, because nearly everybody I know who I work with, who I love down here in the desert, I only knew because of her telling me one of her friends moved down here, Heclina, who was passed but you know, it's one of those things where you just never know what's going to happen. Anyway, their podcast is amazing.
Oh my God. It's better. It shames me that as much as we talked about like professional, it shames me of how good it is compared to what I'm doing.
Yes. Yes. And that was why, you know what? And I said this thing,
but go on.
I think Peaches will be totally fine with me sharing this, and Peaches, I'm sorry if not, but Heclina once joked that, I asked her if she had a drag daughter. And she said, no, I don't have any drag kids. But if I did, I would do like Peaches and just choose really successful ones and claim them as my daughters. And that's what I love that, because it's funny, but it's you know, somewhat true. But I mean, it's brilliant, right? And also, she does teach a lot of us a lot of drag, but also entertainment or whatever. Anyway, but I took that to heart, because I was like, you know what? I will never be able, at least in my, it's just not the way my brain works, and I don't have the resources to do something as brilliant as Midnight Mass, where you have two people with an understanding of film and through a queer lens, and they have access to the people that actually can really talk extensively about these films, that I wanted to promote them instead of be jealous. You know what I mean?
Wait, what's the film that you're talking about though?
The film I'm talking about.
I just want to get to that.
Nightmare on Elm Street 2. Nightmare on Elm Street 2.
The very gay one?
Yes, the very gay one. And it's funny because
it probably sounds bad as someone who runs like a
though. Well, that's the thing. It's got this crazy subtext that as a young kid seeing it, I was like, I don't even think I know I didn't finish it. And this is blasphemy to so many of our listeners and also our contributors. I actually don't love the Nightmare on Elm Street series. I don't. The practical effects are great. I love the people involved, Wes Craven, Robert.
Well, you love the first one, right?
I really don't. And that's the thing.
I'm stuck with it, sorry.
I know it's so funny. I don't. It's just. It's one that just did not. I was a Friday the 13th guy, and it was sort of like, which also I actually don't love the first one that much, which is crazy. People just lose their mind. But the second one, it was like such a weird. It didn't care about the presence of the first one and other films of the time. It's very 80s machine.
It's like season of, it's like Halloween 3.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. It's just its own little beast. Fair. And and I love it. And that was one of those things that I didn't, like I said, I don't think I ever finished it when I was younger, because I don't remember any of it until they did that episode. And I try and watch the film before I listen to the episode.
Oh, that's very cool.
And well, when I have the time. And so I was like, all right, if they're talking about it, I'll give it another shot. And I fucking loved it. And it was, so that's what I would say, because so often sequels are passed for good reasons, passed up on. And when it's a series that I wasn't super in love with, anyway, I would never have revisited that. And, well, and they really brought it to me.
And I just want to make one more little joke, and this is probably getting worse, but like, it's, the movie is so gay that they made a documentary about how gay the movie was.
Right. No, it's true. And what's so fun, I mean, it's...
I'm just again, like, anyway, I don't want to, use the term gay and have it be seen as negative, but...
Well, no, and I mean, it's not negative, right? It's one of those things, like, we're...
Not negative for me, but I feel like people get I don't know, you know, whatever.
Well, sure. Well, and cult, that's something to me, too. Like, what is... So I want to ask you the same question, all right, which is, what is a movie you've discovered recently that you're like, oh, I can't believe I missed that, or now I'm so glad I saw this?
I have to watch. I have to start watching it more. Can I give two of them? Because there's like two that are equal. The most recent one is Society.
Okay. Yeah. I love body horror of Society. Yes.
That scene. That. I don't. You know. I don't think there's. I've not experienced many scenes like the end scene. I don't want to give it away. But it's one of the most graphic, horrific thing I've ever seen, and it's this practical effect probably involving 15 people at once.
Yeah,
holy shit, right?
Yep.
The other one, the other one was The Brood. That's like a 10-year one, but yes. Holy shit, man, like, what a weird fucking film. If you think about it, it's not really even scary. Mm-hmm. But it is.
Yeah, it's so. I love you picked two of my favorite directors for these films too, right? Because they're both body horror specialists. You have Brian Yuzna, who did Society.
That's which I don't know the director.
Yeah, criminally underrated movie because he's famous for he did the some of the Reanimator sequels, which are Rick Holmes, and he also did the comic to film adaptation of the weird Renegade comic book Faust, which we're big fans of here. Tim Vigil and David Quinn. But you also then have David Cronenberg, who is like the supreme master of making us uncomfortable with our own bodies.
Yeah.
Right. And The Brood is one of those movies that on the surface, I just have to trust that I'm going to love David Cronenberg's movies, because for some reason, looking at like the trailer and all these things, I'm just not that interested. It looks like maybe it's kind of a drama. Yeah.
Like it almost looks like it's a made for TV film.
Yes. And then when you see it, you're just like, this is, it goes from being sort of comically 80s.
It's a crazy fucking movie. Yeah.
And then the end, you're like, this is a nightmare vision of, I don't even know if this is bad. What I'm seeing is supposed to be bad anymore. I just don't like it.
Yeah. I want to just chime in real quick. And I want to say the thing I noticed the most about Society was how fucking good the actor was who played his best friend. Yes. I don't know what it is. I was like, this is the best sidekick in any fucking age. It was so convincing. I'm like, this is like an Oscar award performance from a random person in this weird horror movie that must have been made on a lot of cocaine.
I'm not sure.
As most of those movies were.
I mean, on set.
You don't make Society unless you're having a lot of cocaine. That's not a movie you make without a lot of coke involved, in my opinion.
That's a joke I always made. If you're in the 70s and 80s, really the 80s and even 90s, and you see somebody keep showing up in the movie, but they have no other acting credits than these weird oddball movies, they're the coke dealer. You know, they're the coke dealer. Because they're the ones that were always on set.
Nice.
So... I love those choices. And it's interesting because we actually are doing The Brood on an upcoming episode of Cult and Classic Films here. And so I want to ask you another question, right?
Yeah.
Which is, so I don't like to use the word day job all the time, sometimes passion, but you're a photographer. Like that's.
None of these are my day jobs. I'm a special ed teacher.
Oh, that's right.
At an art school, actually, which is cool.
See, that's actually quite phenomenal. I didn't know that they had something like that.
To be fair, I did in terms of the podcast, I did have about 8 months of nothing else to do but the podcast. Mm-hmm. That was very cool. But yeah, no, I mean, and photography, like, is this a love of mine? I get paid for it here and there, but like, I don't know, you know, it's a whole thing. But I you know, that's more of a love. And there's a lot of places that those two things interact, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But generally, yeah. I mean, special ed, art, I mean, you know, I don't know. I've always known, looking back, that I'm pretty fucking autistic. I mean, you know, the guy who posted 18,000 things is autistic, really? Like, it's pretty fucking obvious.
Yes.
You know? Because of that, and having not great experiences growing up because of that, I really love being the teacher, because even if I suck, I'm not a horrible person to these kids.
Right. You're not unkind, right?
No.
And that's... And I'd forgotten that I think posted a back and forth about that before. I'm also I do call it my day job. It's not that I don't appreciate it, but that we all
What's
do
your
things.
Day job?
My day job is I'm an English professor for a nursing college.
And oh, nice, man. That's cool.
Well, and it's one of those things where I appreciate teaching. I love interacting with people who want to learn, especially in nursing, because it's important. Right? I mean, we're all going to need that shit, right?
Yeah.
Hopefully later rather than sooner. But it's, if you were to ask, like, what's the Dharma, right? Of what are you meant to do? To me, it would be talking about making and sharing films and nice. Weird stuff with people. And so that's, where I'm at. Everything has crossover, like you said.
Yeah.
But I think that what I love about so many of your posts and also your podcast is you really, which is why I think it's great. Your podcast is called, it's got the like suffix outsiders, right?
Yeah. That was added like a third way through. Cause I hadn't understood that until about third way in.
You want to hear crazy is that we were originally a Cult and Classic podcast, which by the way, it could have been anything. But so now we're Cult and Classic Films because that actually makes sense to people, including me. But you learn as you go, right?
Yeah.
And you define things that you're doing as you go. And I think some of those are the best, right? Because you bring your own spin to it because you didn't know what the hell you were doing. So you only had your own.
I have no idea what I've been doing this whole time, which is the best part of it.
But with teaching, I think the cool thing is that you learn a good teacher is not married to what they're teaching. They're married to bringing whatever they're teaching to the people in the classroom in a way that is real. Like, well, I don't want to be, I don't want to share something in a way that is so authoritarian that the students feel, they don't feel like they connect with it. They're going to do it. They're going to learn it. And then they're going to forget it because there's no connection. But if I talk to them at like real people, because they're not my underlings. They're real people. I'm going to see them on the street,
Can I have them real quick?
Yeah.
And if I'm being very honest, like this whole thing is an educational project.
Mm-hmm.
Strictly. I mean, I think, I've worked with a lot of like more African-American kids. And if you're teaching somebody, you should, if I'm respecting them, I should teach them their own history, not from perspective of, being there, but just, I'm a teacher, like I'm a DJ. I don't have to only play one thing. And
good parallel.
And I feel like, you'd hit Black History Month, you'd hit, Martin Luther King Day. It's like, I can't justifiably teach kids of color about the same three fucking people every fucking year.
Right.
So I started to dig deeper. And I think that's why, like, it's been really cool hearing you the way you're talking about this. Cause it is, it's like, this is boring. What's next? Who are the people doing the real shit? Even like with posting, like I don't say I'm celebrating Black History Month even this month because it feels weird to do that, but I do throw it in. But like, instead of like being obvious about it, I will like, I'll do a post. We just did one, there's a very, I forget what they're called, but they're a really big punk band that came out of West Philly where I live, Pure Hell. And to me, that's Black History. And, I think also like as a teacher, my version of history change because like history shouldn't have to just be fucking wars and shit. Like there's a history to all these things. I think that's what I love about all this shit is like when you start digging, there's a history to all these things. And it's more interesting to me than the fucking Civil War.
Well, and it brings in everything, right? All of a sudden you start tying it to actual people and then you start tying it to yourself. And I think it breeds everything from, like you said, interest, which I think is key to actually being a good person. The more interested you are, the more things you learn, the more you understand other people and yourself. But also it makes us ultimately, I feel like, empathic, because if you don't understand how what you're learning relates to the world that actually you are a part of, that you came from, then how are you going to relate to other people with a different experience? You're going to see everybody as you. And if they don't do what you like, then screw them. They're fucked. It's over.
There's a piece of it that's accessibility, in my opinion. And what you're doing too, is you're inviting other people in who, and telling they're welcome, who might be into different shit. And that to me is also a way of inviting people in, like, oh, I'm in a, I sometimes think about myself in a weird way of like being a really weird, fucked up Mr. Rogers, because I am trying to be really nice to people when I interview them, but like, It is that certain vibe of like, come on, welcome. Like, I do a lot of research so I can honor them. And I don't know, you know, it's a whole thing, but I love that there's, I think what you're doing is a kindness because you're sharing shit you're into and you're, you know, you bring people in, and the more diverse you are, the more people you get to bring in. That's just like a natural rule of like nature that I don't know how our fucking world has not figured out yet, because right. The more diverse shit is, the more you're going to succeed.
Right.
And yeah. It seems
we often think in terms of colonization or assimilation, as opposed to it's sort of the misnomer of, it seemed like for a long time the best answer was colorblind, but that's not the best answer, right? It's right. Color conscious or whatever you want to call it now. It's like, differences are important, and also it's important to our identity. You can't erase someone else and say we're all the same. It's just not working. But also, yeah, you can't segregate like the ideas like, oh, better, worse, because people have a tendency to put themselves above other people for their own mental safety. So it's this really, I agree, education is really communication to me, right? Like, well, I'm sharing things, you know? And I
think what I learned about as a teacher, if I can just add, is that like, if you use diversity, I mean, I'm a special ed teacher, I'm trained for this. I'm trained to understand that each kid is gonna process differently. So, you know, I change a lot of what I'm doing. One day I'm showing a video, next day maybe I'm doing a lecture, the other day I'm like having them explore. Because if I change topic and if I change the way I'm presenting it, I'm gonna get each kid in the class at least one day out of like 3 weeks. And I think, again, it's welcoming people like that. It's doing something. And, you know, again, I also think it's like, you know, your point of like, it's fucking boring if you don't do that.
Right. And even if it's a subject you love, like, I don't care who loves to write or write fiction or journals, whatever. English composition is crap to them. They don't like it because it's like taking an art class on how to use a pencil. Right. It's not, it doesn't bring the thing that they want to do into it. And so I like your idea. I try and tell my students this, and it sounds similar. You're not going to enjoy everything in here, but I guarantee you, I'm going to do everything I can to help you find what you do enjoy in here. Right.
And that's kind. And I didn't mean to cut you off. If you would continue. I always explain this, and it's also very hard for me to teach. And my place is kind of alternative because it's an art school, but it's not, you know, it's not super alternative, but I've always had a very hard time in mainstream environments because, you know, I always talk about teaching. I mean, you're an English teacher. I always think about teaching English. And I was like, look, if I get a new camera or I get a new phone and I get a manual for it, I'm not reading the fucking whole manual and learning all of it, right? Mm-hmm. And I feel like with English, it's like, oh, here's these rules and those rules, and we're going to go through all the fucking rules, even though we're not going to use 80% of it. And it feels like, why don't we do it in a way of like a manual? Okay, mm-hmm. I don't know how to do this. Oh, look it up. Oh, I just learned using it. I think about like education should be like a process of learn, of do. Some people learn by doing, like let them bring them into it. Like, why should we just teach these set of rules in a list? Like, what does that do for anybody?
Nothing. And it also doesn't teach us to actually expand our understanding, because it's, you know this or you don't, right? When the reality is, sometimes a hard learned lesson I feel is that you go out into the real world and like, oh, I have to teach myself some things. How do I do that? Right now, okay, like Gen Z kids, if you really want to separate, you know, it's a broad generalization, but I don't want to do this. I'm going to go on YouTube, right? Or I'm going to go on TikTok and be like, I'm going to type in, you know, autism spectrum, or I'm going to type in library search. And there's going to be somebody there sharing a very direct, down to earth bunch of information to you in a way that is not something we necessarily are used to, I think, in our generations, really having access to, because it's sort of, it gets that elitism, I guess, of education, which is so frustrating because it gives people an excuse who don't want people to think for themselves to be like, oh, education's bad, college is bad, they leave the church, they do all this stuff when they go to college. And I'm like, well, that's partially the fault of higher education, in my opinion, because not completely, certainly, but it's partially the fault, because we did this thing where it's like, we have the information, learn this, instead of saying, hey, the information's out there. Let me show you how to use it, how to find it, how to do these things that are going to help you.
And that we did all these deep dives, and that's what they are. There are a bunch of resources that people are meant to explore on their own. I've done the legwork. I want to do one more question. Do we have time for one more back and forth?
Yeah, absolutely.
I want to ask you one more question, then you can ask me one more, and then we'll call it a day. Maybe each one will be whatever, how much time you have. But I'm curious, if you were to start teaching a film class, I want you to give me three films you would show, and I want you to explain to me why you're picking those.
Oh, I love this. Okay, I never quite thought of this. All right. So first film I would show would be what I consider to kind of be the pinnacle of modern American studio cinema, which is The Godfather. I think Francis Ford Coppola and the team, they did an amazing film. I would also talk about the history and the making of the film, because it's very dramatic and it sort of reveals that, hey, this thing that we all think is from a film studies perspective, we all think is kind of perfect, was a nightmare to make.
Did you watch that series?
Yes.
Was it accurate at all?
Yes and no. I recommend the new book, Pass the Cannoli. Unfortunately, I'm so sorry, I can't remember the name of the author right now, but it's really cool, right? Because there's so many books and footage about it, things like that, that he sort of takes many, many, many of them and puts them together. And it's
cool.
It's one of those things where you're like, oh, it helped me with every area in life. And I'm like, oh, this thing that I think is so amazing and so sort of unattainable as a creation for me.
Yeah.
It was a fucking nightmare. And so if they had so much trouble, and if this was a nightmare and they could still come out with this, maybe that shit that I'm going through that's a nightmare may come out like that.
I also think it brings a good point. I love Robert Evans, but I'm sure it was not easy to deal with Robert Evans.
Right, right. I mean, I'm sure Marlon Brando could be a pain in the ass.
Right. So anyway, and the guy who played, Robert Evans. Robert Evans also Jewish. I didn't even know that, but the guy who played him was amazing.
Yeah.
Go on, sorry, man.
No, you're fine. I would start going what many people will consider down into, you know, into the street level and then into the sewer from the penthouse. I would go and I would show them something like Society, because I want to. That is two really excellent ends of the spectrum.
That's not the sewer.
right. Oh, trust me. Yeah, no, we have. So Society is, it costs money to make. There are actors right? But it's certainly not the multi-million dollar production that ended up, you know, launching, it's not Saving Private Ryan level money.
No.
Okay. But you see, when you have an idea that's so off the beaten path, when you have something that is just not palatable to, you know, you show the ass face scene from,
oh my God,
that's all I'm going to call it, from Society to what I would consider someone who just typically goes to the movies a couple of times a year, you know, and watches, you know, general TV shows and stuff like CSI, et cetera, not dissing anyone, but they're going to be shocked. And yet for some of us, it's not shocking. We're like, oh, this is engaging, right? It's still a little shocking, but that's part of the fun.
Yeah. I want to relate something to you real quick.
Sure.
That I think some of my favorite movies are the marriage of the weird art shit and Hollywood.
Yes.
I don't know if you've ever seen the movie Pumpkin. I don't know if you saw Bottoms.
Bottoms is great. I haven't seen Pumpkin.
These are movies that I feel like are like this perfect connection of like out there artsy weird shit, but it's kind of pretending to be a mainstream movie. And especially when they advertise it, I feel like they kind of push it like, oh, it's a teen romp.
Yes,
but, Bottoms is a dark, fucking amazing, funny movie.
Yes, it's like, hey, here's a teen comedy, and we're gonna pretend that it's a little bit out there because it's starring a lesbian pair of girls, and so it's pushing them up. And then you get there, and you're like, oh, it's a bloodbath. I see. It's also a comedy and a satire and a social commentary. Yeah.
It felt like Heathers to me. It felt like Weird Science. I don't mean to reduce it to that, but it just had so many. And I've watched that movie 10 times so far.
It's entertaining. Everybody involved was pretty excellent. So, oh, yes, God. Bottoms. I recommended it on our summer watch series, but I'd love
one
to
of my, one of my favorite watches in the last. It definitely is. It's in there with a movie that I will watch multiple times because of the cult thing for me. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely.
What's your third one?
My third one is Society.
Okay.
And there was the second. So the third one is we're now off the street level and we're into the sewer. And I mean this in the best way possible. I would show them a film that we actually released with our Cult and Classic Films release, which just for anybody who doesn't know, because I know your listeners may not know, we're certainly newer.
I'm not sure how many listeners we have, but keep talking.
Join the clue. That's why we're talking to each other, at least one person. We make sure that the filmmakers get paid for every single copy sold, and they don't pay us anything. They just provide us the material. Really cool. We make the covers. We find the artists to do that. We cover distribution, the whole deal, and we give them we give customers a whole bunch of
messages. I need to talk after this and see if we can do some shit
absolutely
together. I'm
absolutely
totally trying to do that shit myself.
Excellent. Love it. I would show them the Janis Dot Click film. He's writer director, and that's his as he says, that's my name for legal purposes. He made a movie called Fish Piss in 2023. And
is that one word?
It's two words actually. But and you know what? After this, I'll send you a copy.
I'd appreciate that. I'll send you something back as a thank you.
Yay! I love it. So what is so great about Fish Piss is there's two things. One, it's made, he intentionally makes things with very old, attainable equipment. Something nice. You could find at Goodwill, an estate sale, your parents' closet, right? A VHS camcorder, two VCRs for editing, all sorts of stuff like that. And there's two reasons that I would show it to the students. I would say one is this movie's plot is insane. Yet somehow it's engaging. Why is it engaging? And discuss it. The visuals are so different. They're so cool. The plot is, in turns, ugly, unintelligible, and also funny, but also unintelligible in some ways.
Gotcha.
There is a plot, and you can follow it. And the biggest reason, it's high art.
It's a review. There is a plot, and you can follow it.
And the other thing is, it is this is a long-term future goal for Cult and Classic Films is that we have a class that people can take online. And the whole purpose is should be able to make movies. Anyone who wants to make one can make a movie. And all you need, even if you just have a phone, you can do it. And so that's kind of the whole purpose is Janis Dot Click is one of those makers who he makes films because he wants to, but on the surface, it can seem like a big gag, a big joke. Like, how can anybody make something this ridiculous? But what it really is you start to realize, just like Godfather, there's like heart and soul and effort in here. And you start to feel it and it comes through. And it's that passion, that real desire, that interest that we've talked about, you know, kind of throughout. That's the thing that I think that's the reason why many cult films touch people in a way that many mainstream films don't.
Can I relate to that? Can I say something there? So thankful because of Peaches, I got to interview Ming Stoll, which was all them hooking me up majorly.
She's amazing.
And, you know, something I found about her is that we talked about was that they, you know, people would say, oh, it's a bunch of amateurs. And if you, and I think maybe what I'm trying to get at and what I think you understand is that like, even these weirdo films that might look like shit were years and years of people's lives and they put everything they had into them. And I think it sucks in when it gets reduced in some other way. And I think a lot of that is just like mainstream shit bullying independent shit in some sense.
Yeah. And I mean, and it's sort of funny. It's like Maria Bamford has this really great joke that she talks about trying to go and be like a big sister and like a big brother, big sister kind of mentoring program. And, you know, she's a comedian, very open about mental health struggles and things. And she talked, she was like, she came in and was like, well, this is what I want to, I want to be a big sister. And they were like, I don't know that that's right, but could you do a stand-up set for our benefit? And she's like, oh, Dirty Monkey not okay, but Dirty Monkey Dance? You know, it's like that concept, right?
She's so great.
She's brilliant. And everybody listen to her new book. It's amazing.
Yeah, and watch all her shit and buy all
always. She hit it on the head where so many of these quote bad movies, cult movies, and they may be like on the level of like if you did a literary analysis, which we do on our pod quite often, even if it's in Describe, the area of disguise, they are bad. But we watch them and we don't just watch them. Some of them do really well. People want them. People enjoy it. And it's this tricky thing where people are like, oh, it's so bad, but they love it.
But as a comedian, do you feel like, you know, I think about improv a lot. I think about people love about improv is no matter what it is, you're dedicating everything. I love musical theater, and just like improv, you can't half-ass musical theater. It just doesn't work. Either you're gonna fully in, or you can't do it.
Yeah.
And I feel like improv, if it's done right, is the same way.
Yeah.
And I guess I'm wondering, do you see that same? Do you see the love of this because you know someone was fully invested in making this crazy thing?
That is such a good point. 100%. Like Janis Dot Click's films, everybody in those movies, including him and what he does, they are They're two things. They're enjoying themselves.
And they're fully fucking in it, right?
And they're fully, they have no, there's no nervousness. There's no embarrassment, right? And because of that, it keeps us from being concerned about them and the process and us watching it. When you watch a movie where, you'll see this, I think, in some of these low budget cult films where a director, and I understand why, there's no problem. I have no problem with nudity, sexuality in film, sex sells, none of that stuff. I mean, as long as everyone's consensual, rock on.
But yeah.
You'll see in some movies, when you see, say, an actress or an actor or any identification in between or beyond, when you see them nervous in a nude scene in any way, you can sense that. Even if you can't figure out how you see it, you can sense that. And that's sort of an extreme example of when you see someone uncomfortable or not fully committed to something, no matter how stupid or how silly or how serious it's supposed to be, you can't live with them. All of a sudden it's lost. It's gone. And people who are passionate don't have that problem.
I want to add one thing to that, if it's okay, is I think the reason you and I maybe like the same shit is there's no way to do that shit without being authentic. And I think even if something is schlocky and shitty, if it's real and it feels real, I will like it more than things that feel fake.
Mm-hmm.
That are designed to just make money or designed to like highlight an actor. But like, you know, and some of my favorite documentary photographers were ones, I do a page about this Arlene Gottfried. She was Gilbert Gottfried's sister. Mm-hmm. And what I love about her work is she was a commercial photographer, but she did her own work for like 40 years and she just had it under her bed and somebody came and they started putting books out. And what I love about it is none of that was ever meant to be sold. Mm-hmm. It was just for her to document her life. And I think there's a purity when you do something for the love of it versus just the business of it. And I think there's, what's sad to me is I feel like things don't match up that much. I think the best what you get is when you combine commerce with art in a 50-50 relationship. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't work in the world of capitalism.
It's hard, you know? And also we get this, and we can touch this as the last point. I love what you say with authenticity. And that's, we often say things, we reduce our feelings on, say, a filmmaker to this concept. I loved their early work, right? and what I think we're really sensing when we're honest about that, a lot of times people are, you know, it's we all had our hipster phase where we're like, oh, well, I like blah, blah, blah. I have to be the unique, you know, person. But we're really saying, I don't see the things and feel the things I loved in their early work when they would just had that passion to make it. The whole point was just to make this.
Yeah.
Then later when, you know, you're making a film that is, you know, there's multi-$1 million behind it. You have a team of 100 people standing around. It's not that you can't make a great film, but it's a whole different process. And it's just so much easier to just lose your way and just people pushing you every side, just do this, get it done, as opposed to I have to finish this in the way I want.
It's just, you know, I don't know if that is more an idea of just aging. I don't know if that is more of just how that shit works. And there are some people that get past that somehow and still make interesting shit, but they don't make it every year.
Yeah. I mean, look at John Waters, right? He hasn't made a film in forever. He's never stopped creating. He's never stopped talking about it. He's never stopped doing things. And it's just, and sort of, there are those rare people that they love what they've attained, you know, and it's just, and sharing it. Just one quick story. I had to say this.
Go on.
Cause it made Meek Stole, you know, wonderful, amazing.
They're on tour. I don't know when this is going out, but they're, when is this going out?
This will be coming out in just a couple of days, actually.
If it's on Sunday, they're going to be in Philadelphia. And if it's on Saturday or some reason, they'll be in New York City.
Well, and Peaches and Mink do, they do cabaret shows every once in a while as well, and they travel. So check them out.
Mink,
you can see either of them and all of them, it's a joy. Yeah. But John Waters was invited to come out to where I am, Rancho Mirage, right up the road from me near Palm Springs, to a library writers festival. And the writers festival there is quite large. The issue is that one side of the cities on one side of the library are very conservative, white, retired, wealthy individuals. And the other side is the very much avant-garde outsider, sort of old Hollywood revival, gay, queer communities, all of that stuff, the drag scene, everything is on the other side. So you get this fight in between. And, and so what happened was, is they had...
I love this.
And this, oh, totally. So this writer's conference came under fire from the more liberal outsider side, which I can definitely a part of, obviously, cult and classic films here. Because they're, and I'm not even going to remember which monstrous asshole they actually went with. I can't even, they just lumped together at this point. I don't remember if it was Karl Rove. I think it was Karl Rove was actually the main speaker, which is insane because he had a book come out, which is insane because calling him a literary person is, you might as well, I don't even know. I honestly don't even know. I don't have anything I want to insult by comparing it to.
Yeah.
But he is that. And so people were very upset on the liberal side, but somehow, but the library was like, well, that's what we do. Cause they are the very wealthy library and they get a lot of donors, right?
Right.
Specifically on that side. So they said, screw it. There was a really great alternative one put on the beautiful little bookstore in called the Best Bookstore in Palm Springs. But somehow they had also invited John Waters.
Okay.
Well, John Waters didn't say no or didn't cancel. He's like, yeah, I'm going. And he went. And he had his books, and the first story he read was called Necrophilia. And it just, I mean, it was the most perfect, it wasn't the most perfect action to sort of signify. He didn't have to say no or fight it or even openly denounce anything about what the problem was with the thing. He just did his own thing in a way that very clearly made messages shown to those of us
who he's amazing
and I'm so lucky I wasn't able to attend because the tickets were like $400, which
out of my
range, but I was lucky enough to get an autographed book from him, so it's wonderful through kind people. It's just I love that kind of thing. It's honesty, it's being yourself, but also, you know, making shit's hard. You have to sacrifice sometimes, but just the act, the worst movie in the world is still somehow an achievement. Even if I hate it, even if I'm like, oh, it's misogynistic, it's all these things. I'm like, well, I have to give it to them. They finished because it's hard as fuck.
Yeah, giving birth to any kind of art project, especially with like, you know, yeah, I mean, it should be a triumph. And I don't think, and I think people... I don't know. I've always been very DIY. Like, I just don't like, I'm just like, well, if I have to learn how to do this for 5 years, I'm not going to fucking do it. So let me just fucking do it and I'll figure it out. Mm-hmm. And I love the spirit of people like that, like yourself, where you're just like, well, just do this podcast and see what happens. Like, cause everything else is just like, you can't design this shit. You can't, you know, I don't know if you've ever experienced this, but sometimes like someone will, the idea of like, if somebody wanted to hire me for their podcast, I'd be like, I don't know what I'm doing, even though I've been doing this for 2 years.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's not, I can only do it how I do it. Right.
Right. Yeah. It's like, if you asked me, which I've done before, if you asked me to guest host your podcast,
yeah,
it's going to be my podcast. Not because I don't want to do anything different, but that's not what I do. I know how to do this. And I think I do this very well. And if you don't like this, I'm sorry.
Do you get to go to Comic-Cons and shit?
Yeah, in fact, we are bringing the film release business starting hopefully at the end of this year. We'll be going to the cons because, you know, it's just another way.
Do you go to a New York one?
I have not. I would love to go to the New York
one. I'm going to talk to you because I don't know if I'll get in again, but I got in for 2 years and I always have an extra spot. Well, I'd have to apply for, I get in with one person, I might get in with two, but I've always been wanting to bring someone else there because I'm mostly there as a photographer, believe it, you know. And I got really lucky like this year to get a photo of John Carpenter looking like he's going to murder me, which is great. But go on. But yeah, we'll talk. I'm always looking for an extra person.
Well,
if I ever get in again.
Absolutely. You know, well, you know what? Seriously, this has been this has been a very fun, enlightening thing. And as I said, it's really great to. They always say, be careful meeting your heroes. And I know that neither of us are probably each other's heroes, but here's the deal. I know. That's the thing. Yeah. It's a little much to live up to, but there's a difference when you meet people that you feel a connection with.
Yeah.
You start to understand more about, like, just from this conversation, I've learned more about myself than I did before. Nice. Because
seeing, me as well, I would say.
It's seeing things in you that you're like, oh, I get that. And that's, I hadn't made the connection before. So thank you so much. I want to, before we close out here, and I guarantee you're going to be back on at some point. I'm not going to let you off the hook.
Yeah, we should figure something out together, but we'll keep talking another time.
For sure. You've got the podcast. Of course, people can follow you on Instagram. And you have got, I think, two Patreons, right? You have a Patreon for... You say, where can people find you? How can people support the podcast?
I really want to pitch our Zoom weekend celebration, our 13th year.
Absolutely.
Okay. So that's starting. It's 8 o'clock West Coast, East Coast, 5 o'clock West Coast. We're interviewing Paul Williams with live Zoom. We only have 50 spots left because we're limiting it. And that'll be that's exciting. And then we're doing like two more days. I don't know if you know Kevin Allison from the State. Or he's going to be on doing a storytelling thing. Arlene Gottfried, I'm going to have her sister on, and myself and a friend of hers to talk about her work. Gottfried and Meryl Meisler is going to be there. I think Isis Aquarian, I don't know if you've ever seen the Swartz family. She was the archivist of the Swartz family. She's going to be doing something, and I'm very excited. So yeah, and you know, we're trying to get a few bucks because I just like to not be broke all the time. But I don't know. At the end of the day, like, I'd rather people just show up. But yeah, that's people if they want to go, they have to RSVP to my email, vintageanosarchive@gmail.com. And then that's our big thing. But the webpage, vintageanosarchive.com. We've got a few different podcasts, but generally the main one is Vintage Anos Archive Outsider Podcast. There's some offshoots, but that's where they're. I mean, there's some offshoots that are put together as a group that are just episodes from the main page.
Yeah, I can't really support enough. We've got, of course, here at Cult and Classic Films. We've got a bunch of different projects as well. The podcast is the oldest running of them, but we also have our film distribution. Go to cultandclassicfilms.com to learn about it, because you can subscribe, get movies every month at a great price. Everything goes to the filmmakers, and when it go to the filmmakers, it goes to a charity. For example, January we put out Pulgasari. It's a North Korean monster movie that was supposed to compete with Godzilla, made with a kidnapped director and lied to special effects artists. And you know, and there's a great book out it by Paul Schaefer, which we have an interview of on the disc. And the great thing about it is, it's North Korean, so we can't pay them. And we wouldn't, frankly, pay a dictatorship anyway. But because of that, I wanted to release it. It's treated as public domain in the United States. So we worked really hard to get the best transfers of anybody has and improve them. But the money goes directly to the Liberty in North Korea project, or LINK.
Oh, that's really cool.
Everything we do, we want to make the world, but also entertainment and the sort of access, as you said, to entertainment and making entertainment better. And so
what was the first movie you guys put out real quick? What was
the first movie we put out was a double feature by a Canadian filmmaker named Adam Thorne, or Riot at the Movies, as he's sometimes known. He runs an amazing Toronto underground film festival called Terrible Fest. And he's made many, many movies. But the first two movies we released from him was a double feature of Assault on the Snake Men and Muppets Pastor, which is I say it's the Exorcist Muppets
the most
crossover.
Fucked up, right.
You never need.
What's it called? That's not an English word, correct?
It's just Muppets, Moopet, Pastor. And the other one is Assault on the Snake Men. Same disc, so you can get both movies and some extra features on there. And seriously, you can also join our Patreon. You can get to it from the website. You can either throw a couple bucks our way, and that way you get a discount on the movies if you want to buy one at some point.
Yeah.
Or you can kick out 20 or 25 and get. We give tons of cool stuff away. We get posters with it, slip covers for the discs, and Pogs, the milk cap craze from the 90s. We put those out. So anyway. Throw that out of my thing, listeners, Cult and Classic Films listeners, you will not be disappointed if you go ahead. If you don't already, I know many of us already do. Follow Vintage Annals Archive and just bookmark the page, because you have the uncensored, the un Instagram safe content there. And we didn't really get to talk about it, but one thing I will herald you for is you don't just share the content, the images all the time. You more often than not give us information about it. And that information is always positive and bringing information to me about people that matter that I didn't know. So it's like you said, it's that history that actually feels relevant and human. So
can I make one more mini plug? I think your listeners would appreciate, I'm trying to get the ones we did about film. And I think the one that is, I think the most interesting maybe to your group would be interview I did with Ileana Douglas, who is one of the fucking, one of our greatest American film scholars.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know who Ileana Douglas is?
Yep, I sure do. Read plenty.
And we got to talk to her about her book called Connecticut in the Movies, and it blew me away. I don't love old film, but she made me fall in love with old films. And
I love that.
I think that episode, and then, and you know, and last one to say is Anna Biller, who did The Love Witch.
She is phenomenal.
She is amazing. And she also talked about her gothic novel, which I'm not going to remember the name of right now.
I didn't even know about it. So I'm definitely
really good. Anyway, but that I think for film fans, and then we got to interview Amos Poe, who's like an old school, like, you know, avant-garde kind of dude. Mm-hmm. And that was really cool.
And I do want to second the Ileana Douglas episode for those wanting to search it right now. Maybe you're just listening to a podcast that you want to follow this one up with. It's episode 54. You guys did it on I think November of 2023. It looks like.
I don't know. There's also a podcast on Ileana's podcast with her talking to Anna, which is fucking amazing because both of them are super. If you want to learn about film, listen to them talk because they are both film scholars.
I've talked about Love Witch, I believe, on the podcast. If I haven't, it's a woeful mistake that we'll have to remedy. But also, just that's her films, in her previous films included as well. They're a masterclass in what it really means to make a period movie that's not set in a period so much as being of that period. Her movie, The Love Witch, is most 60s, 70s recreation movie that if I hadn't known, and I just saw it, I'd be like, oh, this is like a Hammer era, you know, side project.
And all shot on film at a time when no one is shooting on film anymore. I have one more thing I want to share, and I will get it. Hold on. Oh, it's first. Wait, what was it? It was another recommendation, and I just got lost on it, and maybe it doesn't matter. Yeah, it's all good. I don't remember what it was.
It's all good. I also want to just give a shout out to, I really loved your episode with Brian Box Brown, who's a comic artist. We're big comic people.
You know Brian?
I don't know him personally, but you guys have the Dead Milkmen folks on. I mean,
I can't take credit for that one because I had just interviewed John Ross Bowie, who, do you know John? Super interesting guy.
I'm gonna meet him.
Like, well, anyway, it was a whole thing, and I was like, we were talking about music, and we got into Milkman, and then my next interview was with Joe of the Milkman. I'm thinking, this person knows more about the Milkman than I do. Let me just invite him in, and he really took that one over. I did some, but he really knew. I mean, he's a Dead Milkman scholar, and his band is based on Dead Milkman.
I love it. That's the thing, though. You know, we meet people doing these things, and that's why we're all part of these communities, and that's what. Yeah. That's what these podcasts, these pages, these things we put out, it's just to build this big community. And I, you know, outsiders building our own thing. I don't know what you would call it at that point. We wouldn't be outsiders, we'd be insiders. But
I like that you're being welcoming because, again, I think both of us have that approach of just like, because if I think once you try to contain it and make money and do this thing and be a big podcaster, you stop being kind and collaborative because you can't.
Right.
And I don't even give anybody fault for that, but it's like that approach to me kills art because then you can't be open to other people and things because you have to be self-focused and like, well, I got to worry about me. And I understand that if you want to make a living at this, you got to do your own shit and kind of keep your own lane, but it sucks and it makes it worse.
Yeah. And a final, no, it's totally true. And a final word is that whole thing. You just touched on it. We often say, you know, especially I was saying for a punk band for 10 years, you know, the Chud, it opens and closes our pod here. And I'll just say that you hear things like sell out all the time. It's a very hard thing to run that fine line between I need to make the money to make this happen and keep myself going to make this happen and also maintain the things that I love about it. Because those people, when they make something, when they stop making things that you enjoy, they often are not enjoying it themselves. I truly believe that. So what happens is people get desperate and they lose it. So one, support things you love, right? Support the art you love, support creators. And also as a creator out there, this is so important. I was just talking to a filmmaker that we're releasing a movie of in the future. I'm very excited for, I won't release it now, but he's one of those people, like I think both of us who are like, people need, you need to get paid for this. Like you need to get paid for doing this work. And What turned me around to really understand that it is important for all of us, like our Patreons and things like that, to actually promote to a certain level, is it's actually not fair to the fans and the people that love us, and the same for every creator out there, to not do that, because it's like if we stopped feeding ourselves to feed everybody else, we're going to die. Yeah. And then those people can't get the food we would provide. Right. So you take care of what you can. Put the mask on yourself, you know?
I agree with that. But my problem with that is I don't know. I don't think I'd ever want to do either photography or this podcast as my job ever. Mm-hmm. Because I think it would ruin it, because it's not a choice. It's not my own time. It's directive. I have to start thinking about what's going to work and I just think that sometimes can kill.
Sure.
You know, I think we're our best artists. I think it's my favorite films. I feel like the best artists make something they make that they love. They're making it for themselves, but yet it's universal. But when you take that away, when you're making a film for someone else's vision, what is part left of you in that?
Right.
Well, you then know, how can it be good? You know?
Yeah. And I think, it's really hard, right? I think we often get stuck in a box. And for example, like, I want to make movies. I want to publish my novels and stories, continue to do that.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm like, well, this is what I love. How can I survive on this? Right. We have our day jobs and things like that, but how can I survive? Well, I'm going to take other people's things that I love that they can't get out there. And all of a sudden I'm going to be a part of that pipeline. Well, it helps because it helps me, you know, to say it's completely altruistic is, you know, it is altruistic, but it's, you know, I can't exist on nothing. I have to make something in order to continue to do it for them. But it became this thing where I don't, you know, like you said, I don't dislike or not enjoy a single step in the process, even when I'm tired and even anxious and late, whatever the case might be. And that's a hard thing to hit. And, you know, it's real hard.
I want to plug Box Brown because I don't know. I don't want to say too much about it, but I pick 3 or 4 projects a year to support in some way. Mm-hmm. Financially, I don't want to get, you know, I don't have a lot of money, but we did help produce Box's Legalization Nation book. Because I've very good friends with his wife and I've known Ryan for years, but you know, I wanted to like do what you're doing. I'm like if I'm trying to tell people not to sell out, well, then I have to give some money for them to do it independently. I didn't give him a ton. I mean, he collected a lot more money from other people than, but you know, I love that I get to be part of these things because again, his, you know, I could make comics, but I'm not good at it. And I'd rather just be like, same what you're saying. Like, well,
right.
What should I do? He's doing it really well. Check it out. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, totally. And I just love that concept. You know, let's keep supporting each other. Let's keep bringing weird shit out that we like. Bring it out because other people will like it too. Not everybody. Who cares?
I want if you're cool with it, I'd love you to start collaborating, doing collaborative posts with us.
Absolutely.
The only thing I have to say is because I'm getting flagged, I do like to get an idea because I can't risk being flagged. I don't know if you would get flagged as a collaborative post.
We have not been, there was a period, but we have not been flagged in almost 2 years.
Yeah, so. I have a lot of trolls that don't like me. Sure. So I just want, but if you want to do like once every other week or once a month, like I'd love to, I work with people like that where I'm like, let me help build your shit and we'll work together. So if you want to start doing that, let me know and we'll figure it out.
Absolutely. And listeners, Nate, out there, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you so much. It's really hard to figure out how to end this as we're both like.
Of course, we'll talk.
Yeah, but this was great.
We're gonna end this and then we're gonna keep talking for a little bit. It's just the reality. So you guys remember, these are not existing in a vacuum. We appreciate you listening. If you have specifics that you want to hear or things to come up with, or you want specifics of things that we could post together collaboratively, things that are crossovers, etc.,
we'll figure it out.
Let us know. Post us. DM us.
Talking to them.
Yeah, well, anybody. You and I will figure something out too. But you know,
at some point one day, like I interview people and they're like, for your listeners, and I'm like, I've never said that.
I know.
I never thought about it.
Again, that's the marketing guy. I like Ken Rudin, and I feel so bad for forgetting his name. They were two political journalists that I think they mostly, Ken Russell, I think they retired mostly, but they had the NPR thing and they'd always say this, thank you to the listener for joining our show. And I always feel that way. So anyway, thank you. Follow Vintage and Els Archive. And
I'm going to have to, you plug yourself already, right?
Oh yeah. I plug.
I can't do both parts, but I will I'm encouraging my followers to follow you guys. And
thank you. Yes, we're at Cult and Classic Films on Instagram. It's nice. Our most active place. We're also on Facebook and et cetera, other things. But check out our website, cultandclassicfilms.com. There's a newsletter. Even better, go to Patreon. Even if you can't or aren't able to subscribe for money, you can follow us for free and see our public posts about what we're doing, nice. What's coming out, who we're supporting. So thank you so much. On my end, we'll play us out with our normal ending music. And thank you so much. We're going to do more. I'm excited. And I hope you guys are too. And I hope you enjoyed this interview.
Yeah. And thank you so much, Nate. This was really fucking great.
Oh, no problem. All right. Anytime. All right. Bye. Hey everyone, thanks for listening to Cult and Classic Podcast. This podcast is important to me, but what's more important are the rights, privileges, and freedom from violence of everyone in this country and in this world. And that means supporting Black Lives Matter. If you'd like to make a donation, please go ahead and visit cultandclassicpodcast.com, where we have a list of places you can donate and help out. And please stay safe.